ahead of the morning show with Greg Berg. Let's check WGTD Sports and Weather. Major League Baseball, the Brewers beat Cincinnati 2-0. Cubbies and Cardinals postponed again down at Wrigley because of weather. White Sox lost to Oakland 12-11 in 14 innings. Tonight now, the Brewers host Miami. This afternoon, the Cubs at Wrigley against the Cardinals, weather permitting, and the White Sox are off. NBA playoffs, the winners yesterday were Cleveland, Utah, and Houston. The Bucks and the Celtics meet in Game 3 of their series tomorrow night in Milwaukee. Now the WGTD Thursday forecast from the National Weather Service. Today, sunny and breezy, a high of 40, north winds up to 15 miles per hour. Overnight, clear and cold, some patchy fog, a low of 25. Looking ahead, Friday, we'll see widespread dense fog in the morning. After that, a sunny Friday with a high of 50. Saturday, 56 degrees. Sunday, 56. Monday, 59. Tuesday, 63. Wednesday, 53. Right now, sunshine, blue sky, wind from the north-northwest at 8. 32 degrees in Racine, 31 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from the University of Wisconsin Parkside. You can build a career as a licensed professional counselor and mental health and wellness advocate with the new Master's in Mental Health and Counseling from Parkside. More information is available at uwp.edu. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTDHD. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, we have with us on hand in our studios this morning Jane Herring, who is Director of Public Relations here at Gateway Technical College. And we're hoping that we're still going to have with us as well Kate Jerome, who is on the horticulture faculty here at Gateway Technical College. And both of them have a big hand in the huge event that is coming up here at Gateway this Saturday, which is the 10th annual Earth Day celebration at Gateway Technical College. And a wide array of wonderful activities are planned. And so for sure with Jane, and we're hoping before too long, Kate will be here as well to tell us all about this really, really big event and what is behind it, the kind of things that people can come to expect. In the meantime, so Jane Herring, we welcome you to the morning show. Glad to have you back.
Thank you very much, Greg, and I join in our audience disappointment about lack of Kate right now, because I know I follow her and the other faculty around asking a million gardening questions. But the good news is you're still going to have that opportunity at Celebrate Earth Day on Saturday, because that's one really great aspect. We have so many components of the event, but our Pike Creek Horticulture Center is open. The instructors are there. Our graduates, in most cases, it's the end of the semester for our horticulture students. So they are now the new experts in horticulture. So you'll have lots of people you can ask those questions.
Excellent. Did you have a hand in the organization of the first Gateway Earth Day celebration 10 years ago?
Actually, I did, yes. Julie White, who used to be the assistant to our president then, and she's still involved in the Celebrate Earth Day celebration. Julie White was tasked with creating the event, and she and I really did pull it together along with, and they continue to be our major financial supporter, and that's Snap-on Incorporated. They too have a large commitment to the green movement, and together we pulled together a community committee as well as members of the Gateway community to develop what this event might be. And I think it has surpassed all of our expectations. It continues to grow as Gateway's commitment to different aspects of sustainability expands, and we bring in different community partners.
Excellent. And it's certainly been a big event right from the start. At what point did it grow to encompass actually a second campus, namely Elkhorn? When did that happen?
That was, I want to say, 6 or 7 years ago. It's starting to all blur. But it had got to the point of where the event here in Kenosha was sustaining itself, and we feel strongly across the entire district that we want to help educate our public about sustainability and have them come into our campuses and learn what we're doing from a sustainability standpoint, but equally important what all of our community partners are doing. So about 7 years ago, Elkhorn began its event, and people on that campus work with their community partners, including the Elkhorn Chamber, to build that event. And then we had talked about a month ago with EcoFest Racine, and that was the Racine campus event that grew out of the whole Earth Day movement.
It is a juggernaut, and it's great to see this level of interest, and of course not just the Gateway itself is interested enough to put this on, but that so many people are coming and attending and participating in various respects. It's just gratifying to see.
It is. We have well over between 1,200 and 1,500 residents who come out to celebrate Earth Day on this campus alone, and we're spread throughout our Kenosha campus. We have, I think it's some of the events in Elkhorn and Racine, it's very concentrated in one area, but because the Kenosha campus has the Pike Creek Center for Horticulture, and we have the Center for Sustainable Living, which a lot of people don't realize is in existence, is located behind the Mater Grano Auditorium, the conference center, up the hill, as I like to say. And we have a lot of activity that goes on in the Bee Barn, as we affectionately refer to it, where that's a learning area about bees. And then the Center for Sustainability itself, it gives people the opportunity in a real home to see the different steps you can take to make your home more sustainable. So we have a lot of places to visit on the campus, plus all the activities sort of linking them together.
Right. And of course, we're talking about a couple of different Gateway facilities that aren't just open on Earth Day, but are resources all year round, but in a very special way. This is a special opportunity to visit them and access all they have to offer. Well, let's make our way through at least some of what's going to be going on with this very, very busy event. It looks like one of the first things that happens in the Kenosha event, bright and early, beginning about 8:45, is the Pike Creek cleanup. So what are you hoping will happen then?
And that starts an hour before all the rest of the exhibits begin. I just want to be clear about that. The overall event time is 10 until 2 on Saturday. But the Pike Creek cleanup, boy, you, It's hard to say that one fast. Begins at our Pike Creek Horticulture Center. You're going to learn a little bit about invasive species. If you have even the slightest interest in gardening, you hear that term a lot. But what is it? What do they look like? Well, the plan is to learn about those invasive species, go over to the Pike Creek, which is surprisingly right behind our property, dividing it from Bradford High School property, and people will go down there. They'll be able to pick up any garbage that has blown into the creek, and with all the winds we've been having, I suspect there's a fair amount. And also, if there are invasive species starting to grow, you'll be able to pull those. We're providing gloves and the garbage bags for the pickup, as well as the learning experience for about 15 minutes before you go out and go to work out in the Pike Creek. Yeah, probably bring some boots. At very least, it's going to be muddy out there as the snow is melting. So that also will make the creek actually have some water. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it dries up. We have a couple of businesses who are sending small groups of volunteers there. We have some youth organizations that are sending a small group of people. But individuals are more than welcome to come out and take part.
So that's what gets things started on Saturday morning. Again, bright and early, about 8:45. People should be meeting at the Horticulture Center on the Kenosha campus of Gateway for that that excursion and cleanup and learning experience. And then things officially get rolling actually right around 10 o'clock or so.
Correct.
Highlight a few things that happen in the morning on Saturday.
Oh, sure thing. Picture again that we have these different locations. So let me try to explain. You can come to any one of those. You don't have to move through with any kind of precision. In our technical building, the complex of buildings, if you park in the what I consider to be the main parking lot on the north side of that, you'll be able to go in and see the exhibits from not-for-profits, from artisans, from small independently owned businesses, all that have a environmental theme. Either they're using found objects in their artwork, they're selling seeds or plants. They are talking about their nature center and describing all the things that go on there. I know from this event, I've become a Pringle Nature Center fan. Mm. It was one of those things, yeah, I always hear about. I live very much east in our district and in the county, and that's not that far away, but I'd never been out there until, okay, that's my bucket list. I'm going to go on. It's a beautiful place. And so often we don't know about what's in our own county. So this is a great way of moving through all the different information booths. Now, also in the technical building and really throughout the grounds, we have at least four or five different areas for children's activities. Mm. So there are environmental learning experiences that are aimed toward kids. So we try to make it fun. We try to make it interesting. And in the what's currently part of our law enforcement academy, the double classroom is where we have the children's activities in our technical building. So if you look for Kennel Law Enforcement on the outside of the building, that's the right building to go into. And you'll be able to do crafts, but there is also going to be a puppet show going on the half hour that is performed by the Mahone Middle School Performing Arts Club, and they've put together this original puppet show, and again, environmentally themed, so it helps kids learn about the environment while enjoying the performance. They also have another one of the Mahone clubs is teaching crafts there. And I mentioned Julie White earlier, and she and her family come, and they have three different things that you can do. You can use make a pine cone bird feeder. They're doing something new this year, a seed viewer, and something very simple, reusing a plastic cup, a little bit of like paper towel, and you'll be able to have three different seeds there and watch them sprout. You'll have to keep watering them, but the kids can put that together. And also, they'll be able to do a little bit of planting of seedlings. So that should be really a lot of fun. We have always a favorite is the bicycle that is out in the hallway where you can pedal and generate electricity and make cars go around and a few other things with that electricity. So a lot of fun things happening in our technical building area. I mentioned horticulture, the Pike Creek Horticulture Center. They're having their plant sale. It's the first one of the season. I know if you're like me, you're looking outside glaring at the snow saying, get off of my lawn, get off of my garden. But it is going to be planting time soon. The temperature is heading up for the weekend. Yay. And it's supposed to stay up for at least a week or two in the future.
Absolutely.
So you can start thinking about some of those cold weather hardy plants, and they will be selling a lot of those, some herbs. They'll be selling the pansies and some kind of cold weather hardy plants that you can be brave enough to put out in your planters. So please go over there. Lots of experts in the area. Plus, you have some displays over at Pike Creek. The Beekeepers Association is going to be there and talk about beekeeping and the process of making honey. We also have the Root Pike Win organization will be displaying there. Something new this year, the Lemon Street Gallery, and I know that they display here in your lobby at WGTD. Lemon Street Gallery is going to be there, and they have themed art that will be matched with some of the plants at Pike Creek. So that should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what they've been able to pull together.
Yeah.
And one of the most interesting things, I think, over at Pike Creek right now, and it's growing in popularity because it's becoming a little bit more affordable and possible in your own home, and that is some of the alternative growing methods, such as aquaponics and hydroponics and the different systems that they have. So they have some operating systems that they're more than happy to explain. But I know, for instance, my neighbor has one where they're getting greens all winter long from it. So you can learn more about that possibility over at the Pike Creek Center. More kids' hands-on activities in our Urban Farm Lab. Again, some of the wonderful Mahone Middle School volunteers will be there. You'll also be able to build your own mini terrarium. That is a fundraiser, so you can purchase the little mini terrarium and a plant or two to put in there and soil or whatever kind of peat moss you need, and you'll be ready to go with that mini terrarium. And free trees will be available there. That's the bare root oak trees generally that they come out every Earth Day. I think Pringle Nature Center will be bringing some of them, as well as we have a couple of hundred that will be available over at the Pike Creek Center.
Fantastic. Have you talked yet about the green vehicles, that display that's going on?
No, I have not. And for those of you who are familiar with it and enjoy coming to see it, we have moved the location just slightly from where they had been between technical building and horticulture, and they're now going to be, and this is there's a really good reason for it, they're going to be right at the base of the big hill on the way to the Center for Sustainable Living. And The reason why we've moved it, it's right by the solar tracker, so you'll be able to see what the solar tracker is all about. But we're going to have a semi-truck, and kids will be able to take a ride in the cab of a semi-truck. kids love to be in the big trucks. It's like being in a Tonka truck, except that it's a real truck. So you'll be able to go for a little ride around the parking lot.
Oh,
but while
fantastic.
We're talking about rides, we also have the what had been the horse and carriage rides. This year it's the horse and wagon rides. So more people will be able to take a ride. They will go, it's a 12-person wagon. It will be covered, so you'll have a little bit of protection from the elements and be able to take a ride around our parking lots. I've mentioned the Center for Sustainable Living. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But we do have a shuttle bus. So anybody with mobility issues or you have little kids and you don't really want to take them for a couple of block walk up a hill, you can get onto the shuttle bus. It's a UW Parkside shuttle bus that we use for the day and take a ride up the hill to the Center for Sustainable Living. Now, Kate has joined us. Yay,
I'm here. I'm here.
Thank you.
Glad you're here, and we are thick into our discussion about the Earth Day celebration. And
I did talk a bit about the horticulture activities, but you might want to emphasize what you're going to be selling at the plant sale, because I mentioned cold weather plants.
Definitely cold weather plants.
Imagine that. Nothing seems to want to grow.
Well, we have a lot of pansies, and hopefully the weather's going to break so that we can start putting things in the ground. No vegetables yet, but those will be available at our summer sales, which I'll talk about in a minute.
Sure.
But we'll have pansies and several other cool weather annual plants. We have some perennials. We have a few shrubs. And we are also giving away bare root trees. So
and are those
oak trees.
Oaks this year?
Yeah, oak trees. So that should be a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Somebody, when I solicited a few questions for you, mentioned that their garden center that they usually visit that was going to be having a big, you know, spring grand openings, whatever, this weekend, that event has been postponed because of this strange spring. So in some ways, it makes even more sense for people to be making a point of visiting your plant sale, because there are in general not going to be as many things on sale quite as yet.
Right, and if you come to our plant sale, we have a lot of people who can answer your questions about just what can be planted now, because there are some things that really shouldn't be. I mean, I have people that are already asking me for tomatoes, and that's a ways off. So sadly, it is. But that way, you can get your questions answered, and we can direct you as far as what you can plant successfully right now.
Excellent. Yes, great. So we have a couple other questions for you as well, then we'll get to eventually. For those of you just joining us, we have two Gateway staff people with us today to talk about Gateway's huge Earth Day celebration. And this is the 10th anniversary. The first Earth Day celebration here at Gateway was back in 2008. So 10 years later, it's going strong, gets bigger and better every single year. Jane Herring is Director of Public Relations here at Gateway. And Kate Jerome is a member of the horticulture faculty here at Gateway. And, of course, you know Kate's voice very well from her frequent visits to the morning show. So, Jane, where are we in the – we've covered quite a few things already, but what do we have yet to talk about in terms of Earth Day?
Well, I think we should climb the hill. We've been on the flat ground for a while. Now we've got to climb the hill, and you can do that by shuttle bus, just a reminder, right after you got off either the horse and wagon ride or the truck ride. Then climb the hill, and on the way up the hill, you're going to see a tree climb. And it's a huge, more than 100-year-old. I think they said something like 120. Is that what you heard?
Yep.
We now have an urban forestry program at Gateway.
Right.
And they have a lot of connections with the Wisconsin Arborist Association. And many members, many volunteers from the Arborist Association are going to be there on Saturday. And kids will have all the proper gear. They'll be harnessed in, and they will be roped up onto the tree and be able to get just a fabulous view in a very safe manner. These people certainly know what they're doing. These are the people who go up and trim your trees. That's what the arborist program is about here. Also diagnosing illnesses that trees are suffering. You probably won't be diagnosing any illnesses if you're a kid, but you will be climbing the tree. And
that'll be fun.
Last year was the first year, and oh my gosh, people were all over it, literally. There were about four or five kids going up at one time, each with their own set of volunteers from the Arborist Association, and it was fabulous. So that's coming back this year. And let's climb the hill a little bit further up toward the center. I mentioned the bee barn earlier.
Right.
You will be able to learn about bees in the bee barn, but bees, bats, this year bats are another big theme that we're celebrating as a pollinator. And all, I hate admitting my ignorance in public like this. I'm covering the mic, but I never thought of bats as a pollinator.
I think most of us don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, you know, you hear all the bad bats are bad, but bats are good. So we're going to find out a lot more about how they're good at Celebrate Earth Day, both at the Kenosha Public Museum, which has a display. They have a bat mascot who will be happy to have their picture taken with you. And you'll both learn and have fun. But up at the Bee Barn, there's a bat cave that kids will be able to climb into.
Wow.
Lee Colony from our staff has been very busily building the bat cave. So you'll go in, you'll learn a little bit about what bats eat, because there will be some symbolic bat food in there, and a great opportunity to have fun and to learn. We have our large bee display that was funded in part through Joe and Kathy Madrigrano. Excellent display that talks about pollinators, helps people understand about colony collapse. So you'll be learning, you'll be having fun. Bong State Recreation Area will be up there with some critters, amphibian type, and very cute, always popular. So that's what's up the hill.
Wow.
It's going to be a great time.
It is. I know. I keep hoping that I can go and we have wonderful volunteers from Mahone. There's, I don't know, 20, 30 of those fabulous middle school students who are there to help in each of the areas. So if they help, then I get to go wander.
Well, it should be a pretty day for wandering. Right now it looks like the forecast is sunshine and a high of 56, 57, something
wow.
like that.
That's great.
Yes, and we should be seeing the low 60s by early next week. So it's going to be a great day. How long do the activities go on Saturday?
From 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. So it's a fairly short window, very intense, but lots of fun.
Right. Any idea how many people, for instance, last year attended Earth Day?
We figure about 1,200 to 1,400. We're madly clicking our little clickers, but we have three different locations. So
right.
And people are free to just go to one, to go to all three. So it's a little bit difficult. We also have a free giveaway. Each year we do the reusable grocery bags. And so we kind of know one to a family, and we go through them all. So multiply that by, what, 2.5?
2.5.
Something like that. So we get fairly close on
sure.
our numbers.
Very exciting. We should also sketch at least what's going on the Elkhorn campus. Is it a similar time frame?
Same time frame from 10 until 2. They are going to have a cleanup as well of the White River Trail, and that's right across from our campus. If people are aware of Elkhorn and Centralia and H intersection where our campus is located, if you go a little bit further south on H, the White River Trail picks up right there.
Okay.
So they'll have a cleanup going on there. They have a green market where you can purchase environmentally sound items. They have wonderful informational displays. They have a petting zoo for kids. That's hugely popular. People really enjoy that. So they have much the same, and they have a plant sale.
They have a plant sale
as well.
Too.
Maybe you can address that because I think Courtney's involved in that, right?
Right. It's a little bit reduced as far as what they're going to be offering, but we do have sort of an example of everything that we have. So there's a plant sale there you can purchase that day, but it also kind of will intrigue people then to come to our campus for the next sale.
Yeah, there you go. And there'll be even more available.
Right.
We hope.
Yes. Yeah. If we ever get some consistency, I think, we've pretty much covered all the fabulous things going on at Celebrate Earth Day. Please go to our website because there's so much detail, such as the bird walks, that, you know, it's hard to cover everything without me babbling endlessly. And I know we have some great questions for Kate. But go to our website, which is GTC, Gateway Technical College, gtc.edu/Earth Day, one word. And you'll be able to see the entire rundown for both the Kenosha and the Elkhorn campuses.
Right. And if you even leave off the slash Earth Day, if you just go to gtc.edu, there's actually a nice big square right on the front page that you can click on.
Click on through.
And
you're
all
right.
Of that
that's
information
so easy,
will be there.
Yeah.
Right. So,
I'd rather make people have to remember a longer
So, Jane, we appreciate all that information about this wonderful celebration coming up. Kate, I want you to say a brief word about how the horticulture program at Gateway has really tried to go out of its way to be sensitive to various environmental issues. I know that you've had a lot to do with that.
Well, this is sort of what we are, who we are. We are tuned in to what's going on in the world, basically, and it's part of our mission as a department to educate our students. And we educate them not just for their own knowledge, but we educate them in such a way that they can go out and spread that knowledge to their clients, to their families, so that they carry that sustainable sustainability message as far as they possibly can. So it's something that we're all passionate about. It's something that's sort of ingrained in us at this point, to learn what's going on out there, what the possibilities are, and to try it out. I mean, we're scientists, and so we try it out, and if it works, great. We'll spread the word. If it doesn't work, we'll go back to the drawing board.
There you go. Nicely put. We don't have a lot of time, but if you have a question for Kate Jerome, we can certainly try to pose it to her, and the phone number here is 262-564-8450, 262-564-8450. But Kate, I already have quite a list of questions from some folks in the area, and here's really probably the single most basic question. It came from several different people asking for special advice on getting the garden started in this strange spring with the lingering snow and cold. And one questioner in particular asks for tips on maybe encouraging continued growth of flowers and buds that maybe began sprouting before this latest round of snow and cold. I mean, are there things that can be done to kind of nurture the green things that have probably had a tough time of it?
Well, nature's going to get you in the end. It's kind of our byword. A lot of things that have started may be set back. There may be some burn from the frost. But in most cases, the plants will come out of it. They will come along just fine. Everything is going to be a bit delayed. But our usual spring, we have long, cool spring, and then it hits, bam, it's hot. So I'm not worried. I'm actually not worried. I know it's very frustrating to see those lovely blooming daffodils covered in an ice sheet. And the ones that are fully open may be damaged. But that's just part of living in Wisconsin. That's something we have to deal with. But things that are just beginning to swell, they'll be fine. They have the capacity, they have the innate chemistry to be able to deal with the cold.
So your essential advice, it sounds like, is to not do much of anything different.
Just leave it alone. In the perennial garden, one thing that you can do is you can pull back once, and things should be melted in the next few days. Pull back the mulch and let the soil warm. That will push things along a little bit farther. Be ready to pull the mulch back over them just in case, because you never know.
Right.
But that will help out a bit. But otherwise, just let things proceed as they're going to proceed, and don't worry about it.
Here's kind of a winter-related question that I think is intriguing. I'll just call them callers, even though most of these are actually from Facebook. This caller has shrubs along his sidewalk that really are suffering right now. And his suspicion is that because he really had to do a lot of salting of his sidewalk, he suspects that some of that salt is leached into the soil and perhaps compromised or damaged it. What would be your thought for something like that, a situation where one fears that excessive salting has maybe damaged the soil? Can soil be repaired? Or?
It can. It actually can. This is very common, and it shows up more on evergreens than it does on deciduous plants as a rule. But the best thing that you can do if you think you've oversalted, or even if you don't know that you oversalted but you salted, just we do what is a process called leaching, which means that you just drown the soil. You water it. And the soil, in most cases right now, believe it or not, is not frozen. It will accept water. It will soak in. And as we get warmer, it's a matter of just flooding that soil with a lot of water, and the water washes the salt through, basically washes the roots as it's going through. There's nothing you can add to the soil without getting pretty involved, and you need someone who really, a specialist, to do that to completely repair your soil. But you can go a long way with just flooding it and letting clean water run through it.
And you're really using the term flooding. I mean, you mean
a lot of water. I mean, as long as your soil is really soggy and doesn't drain well, then you're going to have a little bit more of a problem. It's going to take longer. But actually, that soil doesn't, the compacted, the heavy soils, don't usually show salt damage as much as the other soils do. So use your brain, think about it. But otherwise, lots of water, and many times spring rains will do it for you.
Interesting. Someone has a question about it sounds like a very good-sized evergreen tree, and they are sad that the grass that is adjacent to the evergreen is not particularly green and soft. It sounds like the grass close to this evergreen is just kind of harsh and not what they really want. Does that sound like a problem you've heard of before? And
if it's under the evergreen, if it's being shaded out, it's being shaded out. There's nothing you can do about that. Just pull a mulch circle out as far as you can and enjoy the beauty of the mulch around the tree. This is what nature does.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not that the evergreen is making the grass bad in any way. It's just being shaded out in most cases. And it's really hard to get grass to grow under a heavy shade tree.
Hmm. Another question, how much sun should tomato plants get each day? And is it better for it to be morning sun or afternoon sun, or is the sun just the sun?
The sun is just the sun. It's not really. Actually, morning sun is much gentler than afternoon sun.
Ah.
Tomatoes need at least 6 hours. If you can give them 8 hours, that's great. And they're not really particular whether it's gentle or harsh. They're strong enough to withstand the afternoon sun. So whatever you can give them, just make sure that it's a lot of hours of sun, because otherwise they start stretching and you don't get the production you'd like.
Hmm. Kate Jerome is answering some lawn and garden care questions, and you can give us a call at 262-564-8450 if you would prefer to talk to Kate directly. 262-564-8450. Kate, somebody has some struggling lilac bushes, and they are wondering if they cut them back, are they likely to come back then? Does that, in general at least, is that a good strategy?
For lilacs, they will come back, but what I would advise is not cutting them all back in 1 year. We do, on shrubs like that that do send up shoots from the ground, we do a process called renewal pruning to rejuvenate them. So take out about a third of the biggest shoots this year, take them out at ground level, and the plant will start sending up some new shoots. Next year, take out a third of the older, bigger shoots. Do this over a process of 3 years, and after the third year, you'll have all new growth, all rejuvenated, and it'll start blooming again as long as it's in sun.
Hmm. Sounds like a good plan of action. Kate, somebody, this is a question you will appreciate. Someone would like some advice on alternatives to the common lawn care products that tend to harm the environment and tend to be really downright dangerous to living things. What are some earth-friendly alternatives to think about?
Well, starting at the ground level, the best alternative is to put in a lawn or overseed your lawn with a type of lawn called a no-mow lawn. This is a combination of dwarf fescue-type grasses And the grasses, once your no-mow lawn is established, needs mowing about 3 times a year. Takes no irrigation, takes no pesticides, takes basically nothing but enjoyment. And it's not an easy process to establish this, but if you are thinking about rejuvenating your lawn, this is a great way to go. All you need to do is just look on the web for no-mow lawn, and there are a lot of options out there. As far as an established lawn, the best thing you can do is to stop fertilizing it. Let it do its natural process. When we fertilize, we pump it full of chemicals that make it very succulent, which makes it prone to disease and insects, which means you need to add pesticides and herbicides to take care of the weeds and the insects. And it's a vicious circle. So if you stop the fertilizing, or at least reduce it seriously, I fertilize my lawn maybe once every 3 years, and I use a product called Milorganite, which is an organic, it's actually sewage sludge, but it's organic, and it's a very mild fertilizer. And if I remember to do it every 3 years, I don't always remember. And I let my weeds go. I don't manage my weeds. They are green. I'm learning to appreciate them. My neighbors don't always appreciate them, but... It's a matter of basically changing our attitude about what a lawn is. If we want a golf green, then it's going to take some serious management, and it's very hard to do that without injecting those chemicals into it. But otherwise, if we can just relax a little bit, mow it higher. If you mow it at 3 to 4 inches instead of 2 inches, it helps shade out the weeds. If you're going to kill weeds, do spot killing. Just individual weeds. Don't broadcast. That pulls back a lot of what you'd be using. And one of the other things that I think is seriously fixes a lawn if it's in trouble is core aeration. And this is best done in the fall, but basically you bring in a machine that runs over the lawn and pulls cores of soil out and drops them. And they actually do look like goose droppings, so some people are not very happy about that initially. But they break down, and this core aeration pulls air into the soil, allows water in, and makes a healthier root system.
Right. We've done that a couple of times. So you end up with these little cylinders of soil. And, it's a little odd, but they're not there forever.
Right. They break down, and it does a great job on fixing your lawn.
Terrific. Another question. This caller says, I have two different kinds of hydrangeas, and I think they take different kinds of pruning. How do I determine what types they are? And what sort of spring care I should give them for best flowering this summer?
There are two different kinds of hydrangea pruning styles. One of them, you prune it to the ground, and then they come back every year and bloom on that new wood. There are also woodier hydrangeas that act more like a regular shrub, and so you would prune them like you prune a shrub. Without seeing them grow through the year, it's hard to tell which one is which because they have the same type of flowers. If there's any way you can remember what you put in from the nursery, that's a good start. But otherwise, I guess I would suggest pruning everything just kind of lightly the first year. Remember that the flowers are born on new wood on both types. So some of them will bloom on that wood that comes up from the ground the first year. The woody types tend to bloom on the sprouts that come from the sides, so if you prune that off, you're not going to get flower buds. This time of year, don't prune. Just let them go, see what happens, and kind of make your judgment from there. You can also send me a picture. If I can see it, then sometimes I can give you a little bit more guidance on that.
Right, or I suppose someone at UW Extension
You could even go to one of the garden centers, and very often they can help you as well.
Very good. Here's a vexing question. We've dealt with this before. This came from several different people. So how can rabbits be deterred from eating things in my vegetable garden? And how can squirrels be deterred from eating my bulbs?
The only real deterrent to either one of them is to keep them away. And I know that sounds, like a Pollyanna. Like, how am I going to keep them away? I've had both issues in my garden. The squirrels started digging up my garlic last fall, which are bulbs, just like tulip bulbs. And it was so frustrating to me that I ended up basically covering it with chicken wire. I put chicken wire over the whole garlic bed so that they couldn't get in anymore. That's the only way that you're going to keep them off your bulbs, because all of the different kinds of repellents you can get work to a certain extent, and then they decide they really like cayenne pepper, and it's very frustrating. If they're hungry enough, they're going to go after it. This year, I'm fencing my entire garden. I have rabbit issues. I lose my beets and my carrots every year to rabbits. I have dogs, and my dogs don't even keep the rabbits out. They'll nest in my yard. So it's very hard to keep them when they're that hungry because they have a brain the size of a pea. So they don't remember.
So they don't remember things like cayenne pepper is unpleasant or that kind of thing. And,
yeah, right. And one of the rabbit repellents that's sold pretty readily is blood meal. And it smells like human beings because it's not human beings. It's cow's blood. It's not human blood. But it's supposedly a deterrent. And the problem with that is it doesn't harm your garden in any way. And it actually provides a little bit of nitrogen. But you have to reapply it every time it rains. And in the spring, we don't always remember to do that. And all it takes is one time that you forget to do it.
And it's gone.
It's gone. So the best thing to do is just think about a way to fence them out. I hate to say that, but that's the only way that's going to really keep them out.
Well, you've always been a straight talker. So that's what the answer is. So, Kate Jerome, you are about to retire from the horticulture department here at Gateway, and it's something I just learned about. And by the most interesting coincidence, yesterday I had presumably my last morning show conversation with Lisa Kornetsky from the theater department at Parkside. I've been interviewing her for decades, and same thing with you. So this is just a bittersweet week in some respects. I want to give you an opportunity to give just a little bit of kind of general wisdom for people who live in Wisconsin and want to surround themselves with beautiful green things. I know, you know, what would be sort of your kind of abiding philosophy that you think really makes sense for people as they're growing green things?
I think the best thing I can say is to take it slow and easy. I've become a great fan of slow, easy gardening. We make it so hard. We make it so heinous. We make it a task, a chore. Just take it easy. Take it slow and easy. Nature's going to do what she's going to do in most cases. And we can assist. I mean, she's not going to plant your tomatoes for you, but I wish she would. But actually, she will plant your tomatoes if you let the seeds fall and the volunteers come up and you have tomatoes the next year. You don't know what they're going to be, but but you have tomatoes. But just don't get so caught up in the frantic, I have to do this, I have to do this, and that you don't take a minute to enjoy it. Because that's what it's all about, is taking time to enjoy, relax, and take it slow.
How did you get so interested in this?
Wow. Well, my background is not in horticulture. My background's in English and sociology.
Right.
But I realized after looking for a job and all of the places that I thought I could get a job, that I could make my avocation a vocation. I loved gardening. I've loved it since I was a child, and I could turn that into a vocation. So I took the plunge, went to graduate school, and the passion just was inflamed, and I've been doing it ever since.
Well, that's very, very evident. We do have a caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on the air. You're supposed to be on the air anyway. Caller, are you there? No, I guess not. Sorry about that. So it's one of these things that sort of surprised you, I guess, in a sense, and that's a great thing.
Yep.
I mean, sometimes life's surprises are the very best.
It wasn't my plan.
Right. Well, you've certainly made a big difference in the lives of all kinds of different people. Do you foresee a lot of, in a sense, amateur gardening in your future now? I mean, are you going to have more time for that kind of those sort of exploits?
I'm starting a business.
Oh, is that right?
I'm going to be a garden and kitchen consultant. So garden, teach you how to garden, teach you how to cook, and teach you how to cook from the garden. So I'm going to do some consulting, and I'm writing a cookbook.
Oh, how wonderful.
So, yeah, it's scary.
Yeah, but how exciting, too. Well, we certainly wish you well with that, and maybe even via the telephone we'll still get to have a conversation or two about this new venture and certainly about your book.
Absolutely.
Once that comes out. What a wonderful idea. Well, Kate Jerome, I just can't tell you how much fun it's been to have you as such an important part of the morning show over these many years, and I know I speak on behalf of many people who have called or written or emailed questions and had them so ably answered over the years, and it's just been fun to be a very small part of this relationship you have with so many people here in southeastern Wisconsin. And certainly you've made a huge difference in terms of the horticulture program here at Gateway. It's something all of us can be proud of. And so thank you for all of that and
thank
for being
you.
Part of the morning show.
It's been great.
Let's remind everybody about the Earth Day celebration on both the Kenosha and Elkhorn campuses. Jane, remind us, when does everything begin?
It will be on Saturday, 8:45. You can go to the Horticulture Center and get ready to do the Pike Creek cleanup for about an hour. And then the rest of the activities, the major part of the activities, begin from 10 and last until 2 o'clock.
And this is a free event, of course.
It certainly is.
Very much designed for the whole family. So, Jane Herring and Kate Jerome, thanks for all your hard work on behalf of Gateway's 10th anniversary Earth Day celebration coming up this Saturday from 10 until 2. But don't forget about the Pike Creek cleanup that actually begins at 8:45. Thanks again for being part of today's morning show.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the morning show, James Gelber, who is with the United States Department of Justice, and he will be joining us, and we look forward to his visit very, very much. Support for the morning show comes from the University of Wisconsin Parkside. You can build a career as a licensed professional counselor and mental health and wellness advocate with the new Master's in Mental Health and Counseling from Parkside. You're invited to seek out more information at their website, uwp.edu. We're approaching 9 o'clock. This is WGTD.